Welcome to Discover Indie Film. I'm your host, Jeff Howard, and I'm about to pull in my guest. I've got Ari Grubman with me. Hey, Ari.
Hello.
Hi, so we just talked for a good while.
Yeah, been a while.
On and off the mic. Yeah. Very, very fun conversation. So if you want to hear all about Ari and his film, Essentially Amy, and his personal history, listen to the podcast before this one. Essentially Amy is a fantastic film that was an official selection at the Sherman Oaks Film Festival last November. And we're recording this the last day of February. So actually, I met you,
yeah, you know,
4 months ago.
And it's almost a 1 year anniversary of the film, actually. We wrapped at the end of February.
There you go.
That's crazy.
So
very serendipitous.
Listen to that podcast.
Actually, we never even described like the log line of the podcast or the short film.
That's true. There were no spoilers whatsoever.
Yeah, none.
But I did name all your awards. Took home 4 awards from that festival. If you want to know which awards, I guess you just got to go listen to the previous one, because this is called a 4 questions episode, or actually has 4 QS. I don't know. Yeah. I thought that was cute.
Yeah.
I thought it was cute a long time ago. So Ari's going to answer these 4 questions, which are 3 favorite films, an underrated film, an overrated film, and a lesser-known film for people to seek out. Once we finish up with this list, I'll tell you all about the Discover Indie Film TV series on Prime Video and the new streaming channel, TVHI, which everyone should check out. But hey, you want to just jump into your list?
Let's do it. Okay, so I did name the Blues Brothers in the last podcast, so I want to do something. I wrote a long list of favorite films, but I'm going to name the ones that I didn't say. So I think the first one is a lesser-known one. It's an older film, The Great Race, with Natalie Wood and John Lemmon, 1965. I saw it as a kid, and it's been like one of my favorite comfort films. I used to watch it all the time when I was sick. It's a long film. I would say like it literally has an intermission built in, because it's like 3-4 hours. This was before, again, like back in the day, like, you know, an hour and a half film was like the standard. And for some reason, I think it's ridiculous that we've like everything has to be 3 hours now.
It's gotten weird. Weird. And Jack Lemmon, he is maybe
Professor
the greatest comic actor who ever lived. I mean, unbelievably funny.
So funny. And like, I remember, I think that was my first film I saw him in, and then I was watching him in other films, and he just disappears into his roles. Like, I couldn't believe that it was the same guy.
And the comic timing.
It's so great. It was so funny. It's just like, if you love slapstick and like, it's, you know, some of the humor, like, yeah, of course, like comedy always ages, but like, some of it was just like timeless, like just some of like the absurdist, like it's just so silly. And I think that's what I loved about it. It was just so silly, but it was just a lot of fun. For a fun fact for the people, if you haven't seen that film, it holds the record for the most pies in a biggest pie fight ever recorded.
I do remember that scene.
And
that's
a great scene.
That movie was on TV all the time when I was growing up. Like back in the day when, you know, you had
the reruns.
Channels. Well, in LA, it was like, you know, the non-network channels would just show old movies in like on the weekends or in the afternoons. And, oh, that film. Yeah. Wait, and didn't, was Tony Curtis in it too?
Yes, he was.
Yeah, and he managed to not get hit by a pie throughout the whole fight.
Until the last minute. It's just the white, the way that they did the set design with like Jack Lemmon as Professor Fate all in black, and then like here's Tony Curtis all in white, and it was just I remember like reading some stuff about like the behind the scenes and like how they shot all that, and just like how much food it was and how it smelled, and like all the props to the actors like just doing all that. It was just. Yeah, it was so fun. And Natalie Wood is just a dream in it. She's so funny and so charismatic. And I think that was the first time I heard her sing. And I love that song, the Kissing Tree. Love it. It's a great film all around. I loved it. I think I'll go chronologically up the list, I guess. So the next one is, I'm a big horror fan. So The Thing, I love John Carpenter's The Thing. I think it's one of the best horror films, of all time. And it, maybe it's not original for me to say that, but I mean, it is. I saw it again with my friend who had never seen it. We saw it for her birthday in, the Hollywood Forever Cemetery. They do that like big, projection outdoor kind of picnic theater thing, and it was so fun. But it is just, it's a really, really just, I don't think I have any qualms with it. It's just such a well done horror. And I mean, again, like a lot of these old horror films are retellings of like classic older horror films, which were retellings of older novels. And I mean, it's just, if anyone like wants to like have a masterclass in tension, suspense, and paranoia, like if you're writing something with paranoia, you're writing something with suspense and tension, you got to watch it. It's just, if you think about like the Hitchcock speech about the bomb under the table, like, I mean, the bomb is the alien the whole goddamn fucking time. You know it the whole time. And it's just so tense. And that, what I think I loved about that too, is that, you know, these were just normal looking actors, which I was like rewatching it as a kid. I didn't know Keith David was in it. And then as an adult, I was like, wow, that's Keith David. But you know,
he loved working for Carpenter.
Yeah, he's great. I almost saw him actually. He was signing like comic books out like by my old apartment, and I was like, but the line was around the block, and I'm like, I don't want to stand in line. But, yeah, I mean, just I couldn't believe it flopped when it came out too. Like reading the history of it, but it was just. The practical effects too, I think, is just, again, one of just amazing. I still prefer practical effects. That's not me dissing on VFX, but like, you know, there's something like it's gotten better. Like VFX has gotten way better in years, but there's something just disturbing with or timeless about, you know, practical effects, and that still stands the test of time. You think of like original Jurassic Park, and you know that still holds up. Or a lesser known one that people think about is like Harry Potter 2, the Basilisk was a combo of practical and VFX, and it still holds up. And I think that's a great thing when people can combine the two, because you know, there's so much intricacies. Like anybody who's ever like drawn, like really drawn or painted with like light, if you've ever tried to, I encourage anyone who like thinks like VFX is like superior in every way. I encourage you to try and draw a droplet of water realistically with all the reflections, as photorealistic as possible. And you'll see how difficult it is to capture light properly and like shading and shadows, and like props to the artist, but like it is really difficult. And so I like with like practical effects, you can just, you know, really see the outlines. There's something for the actors to really engage with and interact with. So it's like the performances are really enhanced with it too.
Well, and there's a reason why the spaceships in the first Star Wars film are the best looking things of all time, as well as like 2001. Yeah. Like digital is amazing. And yeah, I won't shit on digital VFX. I mean, obviously, look, you know, what they pulled off of those Marvel films and this and that, amazing stuff. But a physical model is real. I mean, it's hard. I get what you're saying.
You think about like, now that I think about this too, man, it's so hard to name three favorite films. Cause like,
it's not like your three most favorites. It's three favorites.
But now
otherwise we'd be here forever. Right?
With that analogy of like, you know, the same goes with like, action and fighting. Like I'm a fighter. I do Shaolin, I do Muay Thai and boxing and a couple other things, but I grew up loving kung fu action films, and then like seeing like action made in the US, it's like it's night and day. But like you look at the actors who like in Kung Fu Hustle too, it's like the people, they know how to fight, but they also know how to hold their punches because they know how to fight. So the shots feel real. The shots are real clean. The shots, like it's real action and it's exciting, you know? Whereas like the actors who don't know how to fight or only trained like a month beforehand, like props to them. But like, you know, it's more like a dance, you know, it's more, it doesn't really feel, it doesn't have the same effect. And that's just kind of like, if you take a real fighter and put them in, you know, like Bruce Lee was trained in real fighting. Jackie Chan actually started in the Sichuan opera. And and they all have very distinct styles. That's why I always hate like, oh, who's the better martial artist movie? Because they're all very different. And Jackie Chan was much more like Sichuan opera style. Jet Li was a wushu performer, and then he was a wushu prodigy. And then so that's why he actually brought weapons into the mainstream, because he was so good at weapons and wushu, which is a very, there's a lot of weapons in that art form. And so that's why he was like known to like do all like the three part staff, which is a really difficult weapon to learn. I learned butterfly knives and like daggers, but like he did like the Guandao, the so many different types of weapons. And then you have Donnie Yen, who also trained in not just like Kung Fu and martial arts, but all different forms. So you see jujitsu in some of his films, you see judo in some of his films. So it's just, but these guys know how to fight and these guys know like what they're doing. And you see Michelle Yeoh too. Michelle was like, I can't believe Michelle Yeoh's fantastic. And she, if you've ever seen like the Crouching Tiger, Hidden Dragon scene, I don't know if you knew this. She didn't know how to fight before that. And she learned all that, but like worked really fucking hard. And that scene is one of the best, I think, in like for hand to hand weapon combat in film. And everything's so cleanly shot because they know what they're doing.
It's one of the best films ever.
It's gorgeous. Third film. This is the newer one, and I The Nice Guys, Shane Black. I am not a huge Ryan Gosling fan. But man, I think Ryan should do more comedic films. His comedic timing is so good. And it was,
I haven't seen it, so I'm gonna have to,
I think it's on Netflix still. Or maybe Hulu.
I'll tell you my Shane Black story when we finish recording.
Oh, please, yeah.
I'll just tell you, he dated my ex-wife before she and I got together. So I was at his house many times because they stayed friends. Really nice guy, it turns out. But anyway.
The movie was really funny. It was a noir comedy taking place in the 70s. It was with Ryan Gosling and Russell Crowe. And I just thought it was like, if you want wit, and that was the thing with like a lot of comedies, like American comedies that I have a hard time with, is like, it's not super witty. It's like very like, tell a joke, here's the punchline, here's the setup. There's so much banter in The Nice Guys, and there's like, you have to rewatch it a couple times because then you'll pick up like jokes or setups. And, you know, there's physical comedy, there's visual comedy, there's just like, there's a lot of it. And it's just, it's exciting. It has a lot of, and it has heart too. I just think it's a really fun, all around, just a fun movie if you want to like combine a lot of different flavors of like, again, comedy, action, detective, like suspense. There are some horrific scenes. They play the black comedy really well.
Shane's always been great at that.
It's a really fun film that also, I guess, could go on the underrated version. Like, as I tell people, some people don't know it, they've never seen it. But
well, you just set yourself up. I'm glad you mentioned it. And now you've set yourself up for your underrated film.
My underrated film. I would say The Faculty.
I don't know if you've seen that one. I love that. Wayne Wang directed it?
Yeah, the writer. He's at Scream. Same writer who did Scream.
Right.
But it's not the same director, but yeah, the same writer of Scream.
He's the director, I think, who did Slam Dance. I love that director, but anyway.
But the same writer who did the original Scream did Kevin, faculty.
Right, Kevin.
Kevin. I'm so Williamson, bad with names. Maybe.
I think so.
You can hold a gun in my head and I wouldn't be able to name. Like, I could tell you all the things I love I'm about their movies.
Anymore, but I think I pulled the right name out of my ass.
I think so. Like, again, I can tell you all of my things that I love about their film in detail, but if you told me just to say their name, I'm just at a loss. But The Faculty, I think, is just a very underrated film. It's basically Breakfast Club meets The Thing. And again, like, I love The Thing, so, and I love Breakfast Club, but it is just a really fun, like, if you want, like, kind of that coming of age buddy kind of, again, it's just, it has that energy of those early John Hughes high school kind of misfits, I guess the lovable misfits trope. And there's, like, this group of lovable misfits, and I just thought it was really funny. And, the horror and the practical effects were really solid. And, I thought there was a scene that they did in the new movie Megan, that I think maybe they saw The Faculty, but there was a scene that The Faculty did all the way back in the 90s where, like, Josh, forgot the actor's name, but he breaks off, like, the paper cutter and uses it as a sword. And just, like, also the craziest thing was it was stacked with the cast.
Stacked.
John Stewart.
Yeah, John Stewart, the eye, right?
Yep. Salma Hayek was in it.
By the way, I totally biffed the director. It's Robert Rodriguez.
Oh, okay, yeah, there you go.
I just looked it up because I knew I was wrong.
I'm so bad with the names, but...
Which explains Salma. But.
Yeah, Salma's in there, and then... the guy who was the Terminator.
Oh, yeah, yeah. I can't remember his name. Yeah. But
he was great. He had a blast. Excellent. He had a blast. You could see him having so much fun in this, too. And Usher is in it. It is just... And Elijah Wood, when he's so young, I was like... It was just... Yeah, it's such a fun ride. And... yeah, it's a great, I think it's a really underrated comedy horror.
For sure. Excellent. All right, well, now the fun question.
Oh, man.
Overrated.
Yeah, I ragged on The French Dispatch earlier. There's a lot of ones, and I was like, what are the ones that will not get me so much backlash later? I think I remember one of the films that actually, like, left me, like, physically upset. Was because I watched it actually on the plane because there was really nothing else to watch, and I had heard so many great things about it, and I was like, well, I'll watch it now and then I'll watch it again on TV. And both times I'm like, this is just bad. Licorice Pizza.
I have not seen it, but that is the case that we discussed, that you brought up in the previous podcast, where a director gets a little too comfortable being themselves, maybe.
Maybe, or like saying, like, you know, when you're being honest with yourself, like with your opinions, like you can have different opinions, but like I wanted to like it, I guess, in a way, because everyone was talking such great stuff about it. I was like, maybe I'm the one who's wrong. Maybe I'm not getting it. And I rewatched it and I was like, no, it's just really, I don't like it. It's really not good.
See, my wife got to go to some private screening without me, and so I haven't gotten to see it. And I was like, everyone has told me it's not really, I don't really have to see it. And I actually shopped at Licorice Pizza as a kid. So, so I have a bit of,
I drove past it all the time. Yeah.
I have an emotional investment in the fact that, like, I was there, man.
Yeah.
So I don't know if I can handle. And then I hear the record store is not that intrinsic to the story anyway. So.
At all.
So why do you call it Licorice Pizza, besides the fact that he and I are the same age and we're nostalgic for the what the Valley was like when we were kids?
And that was literally all it was. It was just like almost like a nostalgic love letter that has no cohesiveness. I wrote a list because I wanted to, like, if I'm going to rag on something, I want to come prepared. So yeah, there was a complete lack of story. It was like almost like different breakups of like parts of this like kid and this girl's life. But there was like no arc. There was nothing. It was just like... And again, like, I don't have a problem with sometimes there's like a slice of life type of, like, you're just immersed in this. And I think that's why some people are like, oh, you just got to be immersed into it. But I'm like, I didn't like the characters, I guess. That was the other thing. I was like, I didn't like them. They weren't good people. They weren't, like, I guess I could understand them and their problems, but I just, some of them I was like, you kind of deserve the problems that you're getting. Like, you're just not good people. I didn't like them.
I heard a criticism of it by a friend of mine who's a university professor, and she said it's one of the perfect examples of the female supporting character is more interesting and likable than the male lead.
Yeah, it was. And absolutely.
It's like, why didn't you just edit it so that she's the lead character? Because she's the most interesting person.
She is. And I mean, even then also, none of the characters were interesting, I'll argue. It's just, really did not like them. That was one of it. There was some racism that wasn't called out. One of the characters had a Japanese wife, and they kept using this bit with like him trying to do like a Japanese accent. And it felt like a thing of lampshading where they were like, oh, we're showing him how racist he is. But I'm like, they never made any commentary about it. Like, no one called him out on his racism, and they didn't give the Japanese wife any character. She was just the Japanese wife. So I'm like, okay, maybe you're showing him to be racist, but like, you're still participating in it. It's the idea of like, you know, it's the same thing. Like, there is a really cool channel on YouTube called Pop Culture Detective. He did a whole thing on like The Big Bang Theory. I hate The Big Bang Theory. And he did a whole bit on it. And I was like, wow, I feel so validated. But they talked about adorable misogyny, where a lot of The Big Bang Theory is lampshading, where they'll say like, oh, this character will do something creepy. And like the character who's supposed to be like the relatable guy is like, wow, man, that's real creepy. And he goes, oh, sorry. And like, but they still do it. They still use the joke. And I'm like, so you don't want to come up with a different joke, but you're just going to be like, hey guys, like wink, wink, nudge, nudge. Like, elbow, I get it. We're like, see, we're like, we know it. But like, so that's just kind of the same thing I felt like with the accent. I'm like, you know, you're still using it as a comedic punchline. You're using the Japanese wife and the accent as a comedic punchline without really addressing it as an actual issue. Which is why I didn't like that part. Pacing was abysmal. I remember I was watching it and I was like, oh, we're probably done. 30 minutes in. I'm like, how long is this? This is so long. I was like, nothing is happening. Nothing is going on. Like, it's just, it just felt like, again, like, cause there was no story or anything. I was just like, what is going on? There was nothing going on. It was the equivalent of watching someone eat dinner. And then I guess one of the other things I felt really uncomfortable with was the age gap between the two main characters. She was like in her 20s, like early 20s, and he was a 15-year-old. Like, I'm spacing on it. It's been a while since I've seen it, but like it was still uncomfortable. And yeah, you know, as they got older, but like it's just the fact that he started in high school and she was technically in college or graduating college, and he was like not even like a senior in high school, like doesn't make it okay, but like he was a fucking child, and it's just creepy, you know. It's the same thing I've seen like with some movies or shows like Euphoria. Like, there are really good things about Euphoria, but there's just such a weird over sexualization of like, okay, maybe the actors are of age, but like the characters are fucking children. And I'm like, it made me uncomfortable. It was just really like, why do that? And there was no discussion about it either. Like, okay, like, you know, there's some things as like, you know, maybe there were some of these relationships and we want to explore like, okay, what is that age gap? Why is it like, you know, what's going on? But it just was, there was such rose colored glasses over the concept. Right, there
were repercussions about it.
No, and like they never talked about how it can be really dangerous. Like, maybe like there are, you hear all the stories of these like really abusive grooming relationships that occur, and like it's just really uncomfortable. And I just felt like they weren't really discussing any of that part of it, and they were just kind of seeing it in a romantic sense.
Yeah, so. And they couched it whatever 40 years ago so they can pretend it's okay. Yeah, I get you.
Yeah,
well, maybe I just won't watch it.
again,
and crazy, right? Same director who made There Will Be Blood.
Yeah,
which I think is a perfect film, And I have almost no interest in seeing this licorice pizza thing.
I think some people, like, you know, I don't want to hold any director up to like a pedestal. I love Ari Aster. I loved Hereditary. I hated the last 5 minutes of it, but Hereditary was great. And then I wasn't a big fan of Midsommar. I think it was good, but I wasn't a big fan of it. It's just, I get the concept of doing horror in the daytime, and I think that was fine. I just didn't like the story.
Thank you for saying that about Hereditary. I've always not been able to get over those last couple minutes.
Yeah. It's just, I was like, what the fuck is happening?
It just didn't check out for me.
Yeah.
And everyone says it's one of this amazing film. And I'm like, interesting.
Yeah. Man. The first part of like everything above is just a really disturbing family drama. It is so uncomfortable and it's so stressful and it's so good. It's very well done. And the horror that builds up to it. Last 5 minutes, I'm like, what the fuck is going on? A floating headless corpse? What the fuck? So I don't know.
Yeah. Gotcha. All right, well, question number four is a lesser known to seek out.
All right, to seek out another horror comedy. It's a Thai film. Let me double check. I believe it's a Thai film. It's called P-Mak, P-E-E space M-A-K. It was in 2013, and yeah, Thailand. It's a supernatural romantic comedy horror. I found it. I got lucky because a friend of mine recommended it, and I saw it on Netflix before they took it off, and I haven't been able to get it again since. It's not on any other streaming service, and I can't rent it. I can't find it on Amazon or Amazon Prime. So if someone out there who knows where I can get my hands on it, I would love to know about it.
See, that's the situation where I don't believe in torrenting. But yeah. If it's not available for purchase,
yeah,
I might be a little tempted, you know.
It is if you can torrent it. I've done that so many times. Watch movies 1, 2, 3 or whatever. Watch cartoons on whatever. Just make sure you got a good firewall. But it is a romantic. It is a romantic comedy horror, and it's really funny. It's got like a bunch of slapstick. It's got some genuine horror elements, and it's about four guys who come from a very remote fishing village in Thailand, and they had to go to war. They're coming home, and their buddy is so excited to see his wife, who he had left with their unborn child. And they come back and they think something's off. They think that she's actually a ghost. And so the whole movie is like, is she a ghost? Is she not a ghost? And them freaking out about it. And like the conflict that comes between them, like, it's just really, really funny. And it's not for everybody. Cause I remember showing it to a couple friends, Liz and I just like loved it, but they were like, what is going on? And so like with that in mind, sure. But it's very slapstick, which I love. I love good slapstick. And it's like a good blend of a lot of different aspects of film. It's again, like you can't, it's so hard to be like, oh, my movie's a drama, my movie's a comedy, my movie's a, you know, horror, because all the good ones are a blend of all of them, you know. Absolutely. Very few do I ever see one thing I'm like, that is just a drama through and through, and I'm like, that's really, really good. I think like the most recent one that can come into my head is like The Portrait of a Lady on Fire. Like, that's a drama through and through. There's no comedy in that, or if there is, very, very little, like maybe, but it's like a drama through and through. There's no horror elements, there's no action, and it's great. But so many of like the other films, it's a blend of everything, you know,
like life.
Yeah
I'm gonna add an observation that I enjoy sharing, which is I notice a lot of horror and comedy in your list. And I love those genres, especially when they're put together, because those are the, oh my God, now I'm blank. Now I'm having my lack of a word, but those are just automatic responses.
Primal
fear. Yeah. It's an uncontrollable reaction. You can't fake laugh. A laugh has to come from somewhere that we don't understand.
Yeah.
And genuine. same with a jump or a fear or, yeah. or a scream. It's like, so yeah, the involuntary responses, mm-hmm. those, you know, cause it's funny, I guess tears, like if something's so, actually I tend to like the happiness thing makes me yeah. cry a little same bit, here. Yeah. So I guess that's an involuntary response too, but the laugh and the scream are like, man, if a film gives you both of those, it's
cathartic.
It is so cathartic.
And you think about it again, like when you look at horror too, horror is, I think, why I love horror so much is it's so diverse. There's so many different subgenres of horror. And so there's so much to explore with, and they can overlap into so many different things. There's psychological thrillers, slashers, monster movies, sci-fi, like there's so much that can go into, and then with comedy, is something that I feel like people don't realize that it's very similar. There are so many different subcategories of comedy that I think people are just so used to like this American standard of Judd Apatow kind of comedy. And I'm like, there's so much more that you can do that's like so visual. If you look at like the Cornetto trilogy, some of the, you know, the wit, like we talked about in Shane Black, you know, with the Nice Guys, just like the levels of banter and double entendres, the slapstick. I think slapstick in like old vaudeville? Am I thinking of that? Yeah, you know, Buster Keaton, all those old classic like physical comedy and situational comedy is, there's so much you can do with it. And I just think like there's not enough utilization that I think that people are kind of bringing that back, but you know, there's just so much that can still be done that is outside of the standard, like, you know, oh, haha, like, you know, this is some awkward guy and like, let's talk about how awkward he is.
For sure. And obviously I am of the mind that comedy is actually one of the hardest things in the world to do.
Oh yeah.
Because, you know, drama is great.
Yeah.
And it can get real dramatic and it can, but you know, like,
it's easy.
It's a little easier because you know if you get people to care about a character and then you kill them, they'll be sad.
Yeah.
But making people laugh, that's a fucking high bar to set for yourself. That's all I got to say.
Same thing with scares. I hate jump scares, man. That's a big thing. And that's the cheap thing you see a lot of horrors. To make someone genuinely unsettled, it's like the same level of comedy. To make someone genuinely laugh, to make someone genuinely uncomfortable, so that when they go to bed, they're like literally like checking their closet or locking their doors. That's different.
That's different. All right. Well, let's wrap it up. We're good. We got your list. Excellent list. And you've guided me away from some films I'm not considering. Which you just
sorry saved me if time, you have a you chance make time. Yeah take a look but yeah
well you know life is so finite now,
there's so much out there,
there's content, there's so much fucking content that it's gotten harder to, you know, you used to be able to pretty much see most of the films that are in contention or most now
TV shows too it. Like I've everything, there's so many like award-winning shows on every streaming service. I'm like, how many are there now? I can't keep
track. So, I mean, you mentioned Atlanta. I'll just add that Atlanta is one of the best things I've ever seen and some of the best horror I've ever seen.
Yeah.
And comedy.
It's just
brilliant ass shit.
That so what that one scene, season two with Teddy Perkins.
Teddy Perkins.
Man, that's great. Yeah. Great. A great episode.
Oh my God. I will watch anything with Lakeith Stanfield. Anything.
He's great. Did you see Sorry to Bother You?
Yes.
Wild.
Amazing movie.
Yeah. I was like,
difficult at times.
Yeah.
But there are scenes, there are things in that film that I think are just so admirable and I love so much.
If you kind of let the self go, and I think that was like the second time I watched it, like going in to be like, this is an absurdist film. Like, don't go into this film.
That third act is so absurdist.
And I was like, don't go into this film thinking of it's like, you know, it's like a different type. Everybody goes into a film with maybe like a certain mentality based on all the other films you've seen. And like going into that, like that third act, I was like, I hate this. I'm like, well, actually, no, I did kind of like it, but why? And then I was like, okay, let me go into it with a different mindset. And I'm like, okay, yeah, if I let go to the absurdist, this is really fun.
Well, and I'm about to jump into the closing spiel to get us out of this podcast, but I'll just say I won't use the N-word. I refuse to ever use it. But the scene where he sings, where they force him to rap for a room full of white people, and and this black man just sings N-word shit, N-word shit, N-word, N-word, N-word shit, and then the whole white room repeats it back to him, back and forth. I'm like, that is the most amazing social commentary in the last, oh, I can't say how many years, but that's amazing social commentary.
What was the Coke can one where he throws the Coke can at his head too? The social commentary and how they like got a brand deal from the like throwing the Coke can.
Oh my God, but just amazing. Yeah. Just amazingly smart film.
Yeah. So fun.
And then it's got some really weird ass shit in it. So
body horror. If you're into like, I love body horror. I was like that third act, man. I was like, what the hell?
Such an ending too. All right. Well, I'm going to get us out of here. So thank you for listening, everybody. First of all, there will be a clickable link for Ari's social media, his Instagram and whatnot. And you know,
my unfiltered wild opinions.
Yeah. And you'll be able to see essentially Amy someday. We swear. Who knows? But anyhow, I have to talk about this podcast, the Discover Indie Film Podcast, and the TV series on Amazon Prime Video that was born from it. I think I told you, Ari, that filmmakers who come on the podcast who had features were all like, I'm on streaming, I'm on streaming, I'm streaming. And everyone who had a short was like, I'm on YouTube. And I'm like, well, fuck, we got to get the shorts on streaming like in a way that it'll get recognized. So I talked to like 25 people and we put 25 shorts together. And that was season one of the Discover Indie Film TV series. And now we're on season 7 came out last month, and season 8 is coming out in like two. I think at this point there's a season every 4 months. Nice. I really don't want to kick it up to 4 per year. I can't do more than 3 seasons per year.
I feel if you're curating it personally, you know, that's just like you want to put
know. That's the beautiful thing about season 8, the dance season, is the woman who was the programmer of the dance of the Exeter Dance International Film Festival. She curated it. So all I got to do is like the busy work. So like, yay, someone else took the reins. But anyhow, so if you want to learn about the podcast or the TV series, just go to discoverindiefilm.com. On social media, it's always at DIF Wins. Ari's film, Essentially Amy, won 4 awards at the Sherman Oaks Film Festival last November. We hold that sucker every November.
Go check it out.
And it's a great festival, ranked in the top 100, best reviewed worldwide out of 12.
Great films. 000. Also, I found great barbecue nearby. Loved it.
Oh, Boneyard.
Yeah.
Yeah, for a little love to Boneyard. That's where we had the closing.
It was really good. Sure. I really enjoyed it. I mean, again, I'm from a Colorado boy. We don't have barbecue, but for what it's worth, it's good barbecue. I loved
Boneyard
it.
Boneyard Bistro of Sherman Oaks. I highly recommend. And that's where we always have the closing mixer. Yeah. So what was I saying? So if you want to learn about that festival, just go to ShermanOaksFF.com, or it's at ShermanOaksFF on social media. And its sister festival, really the only difference between them for now is the name. But actually, well, I don't have to give any spoilers away, but there might be bigger differences someday. But every June we hold something called Film Invasion Los Angeles. Same juries, same team, same everything, just different name, different time of year. So you can learn about that festival if you go to filminvasionla.com, and it's at filminvasionla on social media. And I'll just finish up with, I started a little sucker called TV High.
I'm excited for it.
Right? It's a smart TV app and or streaming service, whatever. You can just have it on your smart TV. The TV High app can be right next to Netflix. In between Netflix and Disney Plus, you can have TV High. The website is Watch TV High. On social media, it's always at Watch TV High, TVHI. And yes, all independent, mostly independent stuff, and all curated to be wonderful to watch. If you can use drugs in a way that don't harm your life, be responsible. Don't let drugs fuck you up. But I'm just very lucky. I actually just have a body chemistry that I don't get addicted to much. Yeah. So besides sex, not gay. Yeah. So anyway, why did I say that while it's being recorded? But anyway, go to watchtvhigh.com and for $4.20 a month, for $4.20 a month,
there you go.
You get what you want. Of course, you can do an annual for $42.00. It's not quite as fun, but I have this secret desire that people will look at their credit card statement at some point and go, oh yeah, $4.20 a month. That's fucking hilarious. What could I say? All right. We're in the era of legalized weed. Yeah. What can I say? Ari, thank you for being here.
Thank you for having me.
And I'll thank everyone for... Oh, you know what I didn't say on either podcast is like and subscribe.
Like and subscribe. Yeah, listen, there you go.
Like and subscribe and write a review. Nothing thrown at Ari.
Do it like those old like YouTubers, like smash that like button.
I believe you are, I think I could look it up, but I think you're like going to be guest number like 190 or so on this podcast.
Crazy.
And I believe there's fewer than 20 reviews.
What?
Yeah. People don't even review it. Isn't it funny? But anyway, thank you, Ari.
Thank you for having me.
And thank you everyone for listening.